in the country in that little area you're talking about of Iron Bend, and talk about the community that lives there.
Absolutely. It's 17 miles of a polluted river, you know, and we've been fighting for decades to reestablish our relationship with the river. And our community's majority Black and Latinx, working class immigrant community, that's deeply affected by the issues. And despite all of our socioeconomic issues, immigration issues, housing issues, we still fight to make sure that we're bettering our neighborhood. You know, we helped build a park along that river. We have a vision for our community, and that's all we're asking for. It's not anything extra. We're just asking for a chance to fight for clean air and clean water.
New Jersey already facing a threat from sea level rise, double the global average. And Amazon, is it true, is proposing an entire new terminal at Newark Airport that you're fighting?
Absolutely. We're fighting what we call a secret hub, right? Amazon didn't talk to the community and talk to our municipality about it. Port Authority, which is an authority shared with New York and New Jersey, had a vote that appeared halfway through the meeting to authorize this proposal from going through. Again, like our community, and this is why.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to come back to this. Maria Lopez Nunez with the Ironbound Community Corporation. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KBOO to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kboo.fm to notify us of your plans.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 19th annual Silverton MLK Observance on Monday, January 19th from 6 to 7 p.m., streaming online. Racial and social justice activist Ajama Umi will deliver a keynote presentation addressed, Does American Identity Equal White Supremacy? This MLK Observance will also feature a Q&A session, songs, and readings. Again, that's the 19th annual Silverton MLK Observance on Monday, January 19th from 6 to 7 p.m., streaming online. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, area schools return to remote learning, American Indian activist Clyde Belcour dead at 85, and in national news, President Biden decries the filibuster. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 12, 2022. I'm Ethan Sandwise. As case counts remain high, some Oregon and Washington schools are returning to remote learning. However, it isn't just illness that is forcing schools back online. The severe staffing shortage at public schools has left educators overworked and students underattended. One in four students and staff members was absent in the Park Rose School District alone last week. Park Rose and David Douglas school districts have moved completely online, along with some schools in Portland, Salem-Keizer, Tigard-Tualatin, and Vancouver districts. This transition comes after the collapse of negotiations between teachers' unions and the Portland Public Schools over leave policies. The same conflict between teacher welfare and civic demands is playing out in Chicago, where Mayor Lori Lightfoot's battle with the Chicago Teachers Union has grabbed national headlines. The Biden administration announced today that it would provide an additional 10 million coronavirus tests to schools across the country in an attempt to avoid school closures. The White House said it would make available 5 million lab-based PCR tests and 5 million rapid tests each month to ease supply shortages. However, the new supply of tests is enough to cover only a small fraction of the more than 50 million students and educators in U.S. schools. The administration is also working to employ other federally backed testing sites to support school testing, including federal emergency management agency sites at schools. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said on Monday, quote, "We have been very clear publicly and privately that we want to see schools open." A researcher at Oregon State University says that compounds in hemp may protect against COVID. With more, it's KBOO's own Doug McVeigh.
A researcher at Oregon State University says that compounds in hemp may help to protect against COVID.
I'm Richard Van Riemen, professor of pharmaceutical sciences at Oregon State University. I'm also a member of the Linus Pauling Institute and the Global Hemp Innovation Center. And I'm interested in discovering natural products that have pharmaceutical benefits and can function as therapeutic agents. Over half of all drugs that we use today have their origins in nature and natural products. And there, I'm hoping tens of thousands more we can discover.
Now, let's get one thing out of the way first. This is not about smoking or vaping, right?
Correct. What we've discovered are cannabinoids that are in an acidic form, cannabidiolic acid, CBDA, CBGA, and THCA. And if these compounds are heat treated, they can lose that acidic group and convert to other molecules, also cannabinoids that have other properties. CBDA becomes CBD. And I'm sure many are familiar with CBD products on the market right now.
Tell me about your new article. What prompted your research?
Well, when COVID began, we started teaching remotely and some of the laboratories got shut down. And those labs that could keep operating, and at least in our campus, were focused on COVID research. And so we decided to turn our natural product drug discovery research group's attention towards finding new anti-COVID compounds. And this is the first of, we hope, many discoveries to come out of that work that's ongoing. And we've decided to attack the COVID-causing virus, the SARS coronavirus 2, at the entry point where it infects cells. And so we're looking for compounds that could interfere with that recognition step where the spike protein of the virus attaches itself to the human cell.
What did you find?
We were fortunate to find some compounds in hemp. We tested many botanicals because botanicals produce a lot of different natural products that are called secondary metabolites. And hemp in particular is one we wanted to test because it is more complex than many plants and produces many unique compounds. And many of the cannabinoids are unique to the hemp plant. And in that work, we were fortunate to discover three compounds in hemp that had particularly good binding activity and could attach to the spike protein of the coronavirus. And that's the point at which it attaches itself to the human cell. And so like an antibody, but we're using a much smaller molecule from nature, we are able to block that interaction and stop the virus from entering the human cell in the very first step. What we're going to do next, we're hoping to obtain funding to continue to test cannabinoids against Omicron and other new variants of the coronavirus. And we want to move towards clinical trials and do some pilot studies to establish the appropriate dosage forms to achieve blood levels that our data so far predict should be effective, and then to carry out studies of efficacy in partnership with clinicians.
Dr. Van Riemen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That was my interview with Dr. Richard Van Breemen. He's a professor of medicinal chemistry in the Department of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the College of Pharmacy at Oregon State University, a principal investigator at the Linus Pauling Institute, and a member of the Global Hemp Innovation Center. Dr. Van Breemen is one of the co-authors of an article entitled "Cannabinoids Block Cellular Entry of SARS-CoV-2 and the Emerging Variants," which was published January 10, 2022 in the Journal of Natural Products. Reporting for KBOO News, I'm Doug McVeigh.
Oregon has suffered ice storms, extreme heat waves, droughts, and flooding in the past year alone. Oregon's intertidal zones are particularly high risk for ecological collapse from climate change. Although they make up only a tiny fraction of the state's land, coastal intertidal zones are among Oregon's most colorful and distinctive ecosystems, hosting an array of colorful invertebrates. Hidden catastrophes such as oceanic heat waves and marine epidemics have both destabilized intertidal communities and lengthened recovery periods. Researchers from Oregon State University studied recovery rates over the past decade. They found that these resilient ecosystems weren't bouncing back like they used to. Scientists warn that the decline of a keystone species like mussels could lead to a domino effect. However, research associate Sarah Gravham says that not at all is doom and gloom for Oregon's tide pools. These ecosystems come back if we give them some breathing room, says Sarah. If we listen to folks who are at the forefront of the climate solutions, we'll be fine. We just have to do what they say. More than 8% of U.S. energy production could come from geothermal by 2050. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Jody Robbins knew early on he wanted to work in oil and gas. After earning a college degree in petroleum engineering, he worked in the industry for more than 20 years. But over time, his feelings changed.
I just had increasing concerns about climate change and, you know, living in Denver, local air pollution, and I was just ready to do something different and that I would feel better about.
A recruiter suggested working in geothermal, which taps heat within the earth to produce energy.
It seemed like a really good fit.
So Robin switched to a job as a geothermal engineer at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. Like oil and gas, some forms of geothermal require drilling into the ground and bringing a liquid to the surface. But geothermal taps into water instead of fossil fuels.
You're dealing with much hotter reservoirs and much harder rock, but they're all very similar type of skill sets.
The Department of Energy predicts that more than 8% of all U.S. electricity generation could come from geothermal by 2050. So as the country transitions to more clean energy, geothermal offers a path for some oil and gas workers in search of new careers. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
President Biden was outspoken in a recent speech calling out opponents of his voting rights legislation. Among proposed changes are reforms to the filibuster. With more on the story, it's Mary Sherman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I've been having these quiet conversations with the members of Congress for the last 2 months. I'm tired of being quiet.
President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris turned up the heat on opponents of election reform on Tuesday in Atlanta.
History has never been kind to those who've sided with voter suppression over voters' rights. And it'll be even be less kind for those who side with election subversion.
They're calling on the Senate to pass the For the People Act and to change filibuster rules to make it happen.
The American people have waited long enough. The Senate must act.
But GOP senators see things differently, accusing Democrats of trying to federalize elections. Here's Republican Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming.
Ballot integrity, ballot accountability, ballot security, that's what we're here fighting to defend.
And Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia argues the filibuster is crucial for bipartisanship.
By having the filibuster in place to make sure that we don't have the dramatic swings from administration to administration, from majority to minority, Republican to Democrat, and that we keep the ship sort of going in the right direction.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer wants a floor vote by January 17th. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says he's running again. The Kentucky Republican was elected to a seventh term in 2020 by a nearly 20-point margin, but has since been at odds with former President Donald Trump. Should Republicans win back the House in November, Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is promising to remove Democrats Adam Schiff, Eric Swalwell, and Ilhan Omar from their committee assignments. McCarthy says Democrats created a new standard by removing GOP representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Paul Gosar of Arizona from their committees for inflammatory rhetoric. U.S. Capitol security officials say the complex is much safer than a year ago, but note further improvements are needed. Police Chief Tom Major told lawmakers careful consideration will be used in the future about the use of protective fencing.
We understand the impact it has on the community. Many members don't like it.
Meanwhile, the House panel investigating the January 6th attack at the Capitol is deciding just how aggressively it should pursue information after Republican Congressmen Scott Perry and Jim Jordan both refused voluntary interviews. On Tuesday, the panel issued subpoenas for two advisors to Donald Trump Jr., the former president's eldest son. Dr. Anthony Fauci sparred with Republicans during a Senate hearing, accusing Rand Paul of fueling threats against him. That was after the Kentucky senator accused him of smearing doctors with differing opinions.
So your desire to take
You're
down people...
You're incorrect. As usual, Senator, you no. are incorrect almost everything you
well,
said.
Well, no, you deny. You deny.
The nation's top infectious disease doctor was later caught using choice words for Kansas Senator Roger Marshall, who accused him of hiding financial disclosures.
What a moron.
Fauci noted the documents are public record. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wonders, what if COVID just vanished?
If COVID was gone tomorrow, would you go back to 2 years ago? Assuming Big Pharma and the others profiting from COVID will let it end, assuming the powerful government and those pulling their strings would want us out in the open, breathing together, conspiring, seeing the world with fresh eyes, would we want to go back to our cubicles? Would we have a choice? Without COVID holding us down and back, would we be staggered by the new normality, the decline of our democracy, how our social skills, our flexibility with others have devolved, like young students having so many behavioral issues returning to the classroom? What about questioning the educational structure, the burdens on teachers and students? COVID won't end soon, so let's ask ourselves, what would I do if not COVID, and what of that can I do now anyway? We need other people to see their faces, be heartened by their victories, encouraging in their efforts to recover from defeats. COVID is no excuse for letting our world fall apart. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for It Did Happen Here. Tonight's weather is clear, dropping down into the mid-40s. Rain will start tomorrow in the early morning and continue for most of the day. Today is Japanese novelist Haruki Murakami's birthday. He turned 73. The quote of the day from Murakami, whatever it is you're seeking won't come in the form you're expecting. Washington Governor Jay Inslee held his annual State of the State address, focusing his speech on affordable housing, homelessness services, climate change, and 2020 election misinformation. With the full story, it's Eric Tagadoff.
Governor Jay Inslee launched the 2020 legislative session with his State of the State address on Tuesday. The theme of the speech was Action This Day, a quote from Winston Churchill at the beginning of World War II. The governor laid out his priorities for the session, including a proposal for $815 million to invest in safe housing for Washingtonians experiencing homelessness and to create more options for people looking for affordable housing.
We must pass legislation that removes antiquated barriers to middle housing options in our cities, such as duplexes and townhomes, and provide more housing supply to make sure it's available to all income levels.
California and Oregon already have eliminated one of these barriers, known as single-family zoning. Inslee is also asking lawmakers for $900 million to address schools' needs as they continue to deal with the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Climate change was another major theme of the governor's remarks. Inslee says buildings are the second largest source of carbon emissions in the state, and so, he says, they need to be made more efficient.
So to accomplish this, we have to require gas utilities to chart a path to decarbonize under the Climate Commitment Act. We can improve conditions for developers to grow clean energy resources here in our state.
The Climate Commitment Act was passed by the legislature last year. It's a cap and invest program that limits emissions from the state's largest polluters over time. Inslee also outlined a controversial proposal motivated by the so-called big lie promoted by former President Donald Trump. After the 2020 election, Trump argued there was massive fraud that led to his loss, although there's been no evidence to back this assertion.
I believe we should outlaw efforts by politicians to knowingly spread lies about elections when those lies result in violence. Violence we have already seen in our state capitol and a year ago in our nation's capital.
State Republicans have criticized the proposal. They think it's unconstitutional and say bad speech should be fought with better speech, not criminalization. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A proposed congressional map in Arkansas may violate the Voting Rights Act by splitting up communities of color and limiting the power of black voters. With more on this story, it's Emily Scott.
A redistricting challenge in Arkansas gets its first court hearing this month. The lawsuit claims the Arkansas Board of Apportionment's new voting district map for the State House of Representatives dilutes the voting power of black residents. Filed by the ACLU of Arkansas, the suit alleges the map unnecessarily splits communities of interest, particularly African Americans living in the Upper Delta, Lower Delta, and Central and Southwest Arkansas. Barry Jefferson of the Arkansas NAACP says the House map denies people equal opportunity to elect the candidates of their choice.
It's hard enough to get people to go out and vote now. And when you do things like this, you're taking their voice away. People are not going to vote. So we want the court to bring it back to the state and say, hey, yes, do a better map that represent the people. There were multiple maps was given that was not taking districts in half.
The suit was filed on behalf of the Arkansas State Conference, NAACP, and the Arkansas Public Policy Panel. The 3 Board of Apportionment members haven't commented on the lawsuit, although the governor has said he's pleased with the redistricting process and believes the maps will shape equal representation in the state. A federal judge has scheduled a January 27th hearing in the case. The suit alleges the House map violates the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which prohibits racial discrimination in election procedures. Holly Dixon of the ACLU of Arkansas says when black Arkansans are not adequately represented in democracy, it perpetuates the systemic inequality they already face.
That means that the elected representatives are less likely to listen to these voters on the issues that matter to them. So it has a tremendous impact, but over a decade can really erode progress that we absolutely need to be making in the state of Arkansas.
The lawsuit names the Board of Apportionment members Governor Asa Hutchinson, Attorney General Leslie Rutledge, and Secretary of State John Thurston as defendants. It contends 5 additional black majority House districts would better represent state demographics. I'm Emily Scott with Arkansas News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The American Red Cross yesterday declared its first ever national blood shortage crisis. The organization said that due to problems connected to the pandemic, doctors have been forced to choose which patients can receive transfusions. The supplier of 40% of the nation's blood, the Red Cross has seen a 10% decline in donors since the start of the pandemic, which has also caused blood drive cancellations and staffing shortages. A joint statement issued Monday by the Red Cross, America's Blood Centers, and the Association for the Advancement of Blood and Biotherapies said, quote, "In recent weeks, blood centers across the country have reported less than 1 day's supply of blood of certain critical blood types, a dangerously low level. Those who can donate, especially people with O positive and O negative blood types, are urged to schedule an appointment at redcrossblood.org or 1-800-RED-CROSS. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and human rights groups in Nevada are calling for new laws to help victims and punish abusers. With the story, here's Suzanne Potter.
January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and combating the problem is especially important in Nevada, which is home to the largest commercial sex trade per capita in the country. More than 5,000 people, mostly women and girls, are sold for sex in Nevada each month, according to a 2019 study from Creighton University. Melissa Holland is a co-founder at Awaken, a Reno-based nonprofit that helps survivors of sex trafficking get their lives back. She says the traffickers target local teenagers.
Over the last 4 years, Awaken has seen victims come out of every single high school in Reno Sparks and most of the middle schools.
All sex trafficking is illegal, online or otherwise, in Clark and Washoe counties, which include Las Vegas and Reno. But solicitation of an adult for sex is only a misdemeanor, punishable by a $1,000 fine or up to 6 months in jail. And brothels are legal in certain parts of 10 other Nevada counties. Holland says she'd like to see the sex trade banned in every county, or at least to have the penalty raised to what's known as a gross misdemeanor.
We have a sex tourism community here, which unfortunately means this is where traffickers come to groom girls and to traffic them. Traffickers want to come to Nevada because the laws have done half the work for them in terms of desensitizing people to prostitution.
Awaken and other groups like it offer transitional housing, a drop-in center, and counseling, and they make presentations at local schools. The Nevada Attorney General's website also has links to multiple agencies and programs designed to help victims. For Nevada News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Native American activist and co-founder of the American Indian Movement, Clyde Belcourt, has died today. Belcourt is being remembered for his fearless advocacy across the continent. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tributes poured in on social media Tuesday following news of the passing of Clyde Belcourt, White Earth Nation, co-founder of the American Indian Movement in the 1960s. He's being remembered for his advocacy on Native issues and his dedication to the Native community in the Twin Cities area in Minnesota. Winona LaDuke, Native rights advocate, worked with Belcourt and the American Indian Movement in the 70s and was a longtime friend. She shared some thoughts about Belcourt's leadership Tuesday night on the talk show Native Roots Radio.
You know what a great leader, that guy, man. I mean, he just relentless. Talk about a history, some decades of standing up for the rights of Indian people, being fearless and courageous. You know, the sound of thunder walking into a room, that'd be his name, coming thunder, you know. I mean, they knew that you know, he was going to be standing for something that would matter. So just the passing of a great leader, and he had a pretty good run, and we're proud to have known him.
Family and friends say Belcourt died of cancer. He was 85 years old. Canada's Indigenous Services Minister says Ottawa will be there to help the remote community of Bearskin Lake in northern Ontario. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, about half of the reserve's 400 residents have COVID-19, and Native leaders have been calling for help.
Bearskin Lake is a remote fly-in community, and it's facing a severe COVID-19 outbreak. Leaders declared a state of emergency at the end of December, calling the situation a crisis. The community has no hospital. The only health care comes from a nursing station staffed by 2 nurses. Any evacuation takes more than 3 hours by plane from Sioux Lookout or Thunder Bay. A federal rapid response team with nurses, a paramedic, and 2 environmental health officers arrived on December 30th with the ability to test for COVID-19. Indigenous Services Minister Patty Haidu says the federal government is there to help.
We have 5 or so health professionals, another 32 being paid to help take care of essential services like chopping firewood, delivering food, whether it's other logistic issues, whether it's covering the cost of charters, as I committed to the chief. We're going to be there for Bearskin for as long as it takes with whatever it takes.
But some Native leaders say it's not enough. Nishnabiaski Nation Grand Chief Derek Fox says the federal and provincial governments need to acknowledge that Bearskin is in crisis, and he insists they're not treating it that way. Haidu says Ottawa has committed more than $1 million to help deal with the outbreak. There are other outbreaks in remote communities such as Nunavut, Northern Quebec, and Labrador. Some have banned all non-essential travel to and from their communities. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The COVID-19 surge is impacting in-person learning at Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas, as the spring semester is set to begin. Haskell leadership announced classes will start January 18th, but will be held entirely online for the first 3 weeks of school. Haskell senior Molly Adams reacted to the news.
I think it's a responsible start. The Omicron variant is spreading. It's dangerous. We shouldn't be in person, even though I'd like to be in person.
Haskell leadership will monitor the COVID-19 surge and will revisit holding in-person classes in February. Other colleges serving Native students are also being impacted by the COVID-19 surge. The College of the Menominee Nation in Wisconsin announced this week a one-week delay to the start of its spring semester. Classes will begin on January 24th in a hybrid format. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 12, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael. The producer is Ethan Sandweiss, myself, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Anthony Lizowitz, Emily Scott, Tramel Gomes, Suzanne Potter, and Lily Bolke. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. The podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for It Did Happen Here.
This radio show contains graphic descriptions of violence, occasional use of the N-word, and other content that some people may find disturbing or offensive.
This radio show was produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon.
Someone will call us up and say, hey, my friend works at this Pizza Hut, and this Nazi works there, and he's always with her. And so we would go to the Pizza Hut, we would wait there, and when they get off work, we'd follow them home, and then follow them to another home, and then we'd stake that place out, and we would just start making connections. All of a sudden, we had this network that was all scribbled out on a notepad that had like 20 different addresses on it with the